Welcome to Tell Me What You're Working On. I'm Gabriella Filippi, and in this series, I speak to creatives in our community about what they do, how they do it, and why they do it. Sewing since childhood by learning from the women in her family, artist Louise Wells was encouraged from an early age to make and create. Art became a focus through school and into university, with textiles as her preferred medium. Working primarily with recycled textiles, her art practice explores beauty in the ordinary, creating some exquisite work. In this conversation, she talks studios, long walks, and going down the rabbit hole of research. Enjoy. Louise, thank you so much for joining me today. It's so lovely to meet you.
Thank you for inviting me to be part of this program.
Yeah, I've seen your work. I love your work. Can you please tell me a little bit about you and your background?
Okay, so I've always had a love of textiles. I grew up in a family where sewing and crocheting and art and craft was very much appreciated. My mum always sewed our clothes, and I learnt to sew from her at a very young age. Started sewing dolls' clothes quite early on, and then started sewing all my own clothes by the time I was about 12. My nana, well, she did beautiful embroidery, but she also knitted and crocheted. And, you know, she's left-handed, but she taught me how to crochet right-handed, which was quite bizarre. Extended aunties and that all sewed as well. On my dad's side of the family, a lot of them were painters, hobby painters. So I had that background and influence as well. My dad was now a retired carpenter. And he always encouraged me, you know, if I wanted to get in the shed and make things, that was always a possibility. So, yeah, it was very much encouraged to make and create and make do and play with things. Yeah.
I love that, because that's a theme that I'm finding, and all kids are inherently creative. Yeah. It's where the nurturing, and that also depends on a whole bunch of factors, not just the nature of the people around you, but circumstances can also dictate that. But it's fascinating, the people that I'm speaking to, and clearly creativity was really valued in your household. Mm. So you went on to study art. Tell me a little bit about what that was like, what kind of mediums you explored, and how that took you to textiles.
Okay, so first of all, I went to Balcatta Senior High School, which was a specialist art program. I think it still is, isn't
it? Yeah, it is.
So I did 5 years of special art there. So we had a go of absolutely everything in that time. But, you know, the textiles was always my favourite thing to do. I'm really not that keen on drawing and painting. Yeah. And then I went on to study textiles at Waite, when it was Waite, not Curtin. And then one of my lecturers, Kate Wedden-Jones, invited me to do a traineeship with her at Fremantle Art Centre. She was in the textile studio there, which has a 10-metre long print table. So we were printing lengths of fabric where you need two people to use the screen and move the screen along. And then at the same time, I started printing and selling and designing and selling my own work as well at craft markets and fairs and exhibiting a bit in galleries and things like that.
With the medium of textiles, what does it allow you to explore, do you think?
I think, you know, now particularly it fits in with, you know, it's a woman's domestic thing, but it fits into having a family and working from home. And, you know, I love how people do big sculptures and work in clay and all those other hands-on crafts and things. But you need to be outside of your home to do a lot of that. I've always loved textiles anyway, but I have a son who has Down syndrome. So that has really changed the whole focus of how my day and my week works. So I'm his number one carer, of course. So I now make work that I can stop and start at a moment's notice, and I have a home studio. Previously I've had studios outside of the home, but, you know, that doesn't work for me anymore. Also, all of my work, I don't print big, you know, 10-metre lengths of fabric anymore, because once you start doing that, you have to continue, and I need to be able to stop. I don't dye lots of fabrics anymore either, for the same reason. But it's just working with fabrics that I just love.
So can you – you've recently had an exhibition at Mundaring Art Centre. Can you describe for people that haven't seen your work what it is, what kind of work it is, how it's formed, what it looks like?
Okay, so that exhibition has quite a few different techniques that I've used. So the exhibition itself started because I started walking on a daily basis, well, just as COVID started in January 2020, daily, and I was walking the streets of our neighbourhood, which was, you know, really convenient because that's all we were allowed to do for a lot of 2020.
Yeah.
I walked the hills because that's where I wanted to get the best exercise. They weren't the prettiest streets in the suburb, but they were the ones that, you know, got my breath up and running. So as I was walking for exercise, but I started to notice, because I do exactly the same walk every day, little things. So I'd take a photo of the sky every day from the top of the hill as I caught my breath. I'd see the birds in a certain spot. I'd started over the season seeing the change in the cracks in the pavement, you know, from the really mossy bright green to the, you know, full of weeds but also dying off. So they've all become different artworks, and you know, some people might even look at them and go, is this the same artist, because it's quite a variety of work with textiles. So, you know, one of them, the one looking at the cracks in the pavement, is an old woolen blanket, and it's stitched mostly with tiny little colonial knots and little other stitches just representing what that ground cover would look like. Another one is all just photos. It's got about 360 photos of what the sky looks every day. And that's on paper, but it's stitched. The paper is all stitched together to make one big piece.
And so the pieces with the recycled materials, I'm thinking of Louise creates these. They're essentially round pieces, and I'll let you explain what they are.
Okay, that's the Marking Time series. There's two series in that. So that was really the first work that I did in that for this body of work. I exhibited some of it in an exhibition down at Lost Eden Gallery called The Passioning Habit. And I noticed one particular banksia bush, an acorn banksia, on my walk, and there's no other banksias on my walk pretty much. But it's the Perth banksia plain. So, you know, there should be, but they've all been bulldozed over the years. And I noticed the subtle little change over time as those little florets bloomed. And I had done work previously with coiling fabrics, so folding them and coiling them. And then I thought, you know, just to mimic this particular shape, could I just do a little fold and tuck? And that's what I did. And I folded and tucked fabrics to make these circles. But they're all made out of old men's business shirts. So there was in Canning Vale the Mega Barn Op Shop. It was part of one of the charity chains. And it was a massive big shed where all the textiles that hadn't sold in the op shops had come back. It was at the absolute end of its cycle, and it was obviously going to be landfill or going overseas or something. You could buy fabric by the kilo, and I bought 18 kilos worth of men's shirts, and I washed them. It was 86 shirts or something like that, and I washed them all, and I cut them all up and stripped them into about 1-inch pieces and folded them in half and pleated them, and So, you know, really old, ugly, faded shirts, some of the most ugly patterns. Mm. But once they're actually folded, you just see the very edge of them, or the raw edge, you get that interesting effect.
Well, combined, they create a beautiful artwork. Yeah. And for anyone that wants to see them that hasn't seen them, you can go on to Louise's Instagram and just to have a bit of an idea of what she's talking about. It's quite incredible. In reading some of the bio information about you, there was a line that really caught me, and your work is about the lost beauty in the ordinary, which really resonated, because coming back to what you said earlier about fabrics and textiles being associated with domestic duties, can you tell me a little bit more about that, because I find that fascinating?
So I mostly use recycled textiles now. Yeah. And, you know, so I'll give you a bit of background. You know, our fashion industry is an absolute disaster. Now, the fast fashion, the amount of clothing we throw away, the damage that's caused to the environment from word go, from, you know, all the chemicals and dyes, you know, every single process is the second biggest polluter. So, you know, in that I started to look at how I can use recycled fabrics more. And I started using men's business ties first, because they're just stunningly gorgeous. Mm. I think, you know, recycled fabrics also have a story behind them. There's, you know, when I was first using those ties, and some of them I got from uncles and friends of friends, and some came from op shops, and you'd go, okay, well, this might have been the tie that my uncle wore when he was in Leonora. And then you wash it and you go, is that some Leonora dust in there? Because it was a 70s tie. So there's all that story you connect. And then when I was buying them from op shops, I'm like, well, you know, that's a school kid's tie. I wonder what he's doing now. Or that's a business, you know, for different companies. And, you know, there's this inherent story in recycled ties or business shirts or any textiles, you know, even the lovely doilies you think of the home that people have made with those. One of the other works I did a few years ago was called Of Our Time, Ordinary Lives, and it was about my grandmother and my mother and myself. And my grandmother made these exquisite doilies for her glory box. Yeah. And, you know, they've come over from the East with her as some of the few precious items she brought with her. And my mum still got them, you know, and, you know, I think all textile people working in textiles and love textiles just love that story behind the old pieces.
And I think also just the fact that the materials that you're working with already have a story infused in them. It's an extra layer. It's another step toward a different kind of history, and it carries it throughout. I think it's quite fascinating. Yeah. But I do love the idea of celebrating the everyday, because I think it's underrated.
Yeah.
And for example, referring to the doilies that you're talking about, you know, my mum was the same. My mum learnt exquisite embroidery in school, and you know, as a teenager, seeing the work, thinking, how on earth did you achieve this? That's what we all had to do at school, is what she told me. And it's beautiful craft work, but it's of its time, because we certainly didn't learn that. And it stands on its own as a piece of work, but it's also, for me, it's now a memento of a childhood and a time. And she's from Germany, a place where it's just indicative, I guess, is probably what I'm saying. So that was considered ordinary. That's just what you did at school, whereas I look at that as something precious, not just because my mum made it, but because it's an exquisite piece of work, and she would dismiss it. That's just what we did at school. So I find that quite interesting.
If you look at my Instagram, you'll just see there's...
I saw buttons in your Instagram post in some beautiful pieces. Buttons, everyday, functional.
So there's a technique that I use. It's a coiling technique, which is...
That's what it was.
So they're folded in half, strips of fabric, and coiled and stitched into little kind of balls, I suppose. And there's a piece that is like a sphere covered in them. I've made little houses that are another tribute to my mother-in-law in that same kind of technique. So I'm just continually refining and changing the techniques that I use. And just, you know, as you're making, you're kind of thinking, oh, what if I did this and what if I did that? And you know, you're then hurriedly trying to finish that because you want to start trying the next thing.
So do you start off thinking, I want to use this medium and see what I can do with it? Or do you start off with more of an idea of what you want to create and then look for what will help you achieve that?
It's a bit of both. Sometimes I get a really strong idea for the concept of it, and sometimes you're working towards like an exhibition title or something like that. Other times I'm just playing with materials. So it just depends. Often it's the concept that comes first and I go, how am I going to make that? And then you go, right, okay, I'm going to start. And the first step is usually, it's not going to work like that. You start all over again, and then you just keep refining until you find really what the material's prepared to do, because, you know, you don't really have total control of what your medium's going to do. It's got its qualities.
So when you're working toward an exhibition, do you, looking at your work, it looks incredibly labour intensive. I appreciate that all artwork is, but I guess because of the medium, it's more obvious, I think, the labour involved. Do you ever find yourself in a situation where you think, I just do not have the time, you know, I'm going to run short of time?
I always want to achieve way more probably than I do, but if I have I always work towards a deadline, and I work with great expectation that everything will fall apart at some point along the track. Well, I have a child with a disability and I have a house full of kids, and so, you know, there are things that just happen at the worst possible moment. So I'm quite organised, but I do also know that my work takes a long time to make. So, but that deadline gets me in the studio every single day, and I work and work and work some days if I've got a deadline close by.
Sorry, when you said it falling apart, I actually was thinking that you were referring to the artwork and it just wasn't going in the direction that you want. Rather, sorry, not so much your circumstances.
Absolutely, that happens as well. Yeah. You know, you can be almost finished and you can go, yeah, that's not working at all. And you know, let it sit. And I do put in that time to let something sit for a couple of days and go, yep, what can I do with this? And usually, trust in it now that in a few days that idea that can, tweak it a bit, that it will work.
That's really interesting, because I want to ask you about that. You know, where do you get your ideas from, and do you ever worry that they won't come?
I think when you've done a big project like this one I've just done, you do kind of go a bit like, what's next, and what next big idea will I have? Because I've got lots of little ideas, and I'm working currently on lots of juried shows that, like you put one piece in. So I've got lots of little things, but I don't have that big story to tell again yet. And that kind of plays on your mind a bit for a while of what's next in that. But I also know that eventually that will come now. Yeah.
So you don't, I guess I equate it to like writer's block, you don't find yourself in a position where you turn up in the studio one day and you're just blank and you doubt.
I doubt all the time. Okay. But I also don't leave – I don't know if you're familiar with Austin Kleon. He wrote – yeah. And one of the things he talks about is chain smoking. So you never kind of leave something that's – you just like the next thing. So I don't leave the studio with something complete. There's always something to just walk in, sit down – and just keep stitching that thing. So, and then by the time you're in that process, then you can start to think a bit more about what that next thing might be. So I've got lots of other projects. Like I've got one that's just sitting there that I just can't get to because of other works I'm doing at the moment.
So what's your routine like? How often do you get in the studio?
Every day.
And for a good chunk of time, or do you just snatch whatever you can depending on what's happening that day?
It can be a bit like that because I have my son with Down syndrome. Often the morning is getting him sorted out with support workers coming over and things like that, and then I do a bit of admin type work. So mostly it's by the time it's the afternoon I've got into the studio, and then I'll go back in the evening as well and do a little 2 hours there, and often on the weekends. Yeah.
Is it your happy place?
Absolutely.
Do you have a tidy or a messy studio?
Oh, it's atrocious. I have a reasonably good sized room, and I have, not much bigger than your laptop area to work at the moment. But my daughter has just moved out of home, so we're having a big restructure of several rooms. So I'm hoping it will, I'll have a bit more storage and things. That would be better.
Studio part two.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
You sometimes hear about creative people who, once they finish a project, they do a big purge of the space as a sign of completion and then to create a fresh start. And then I'm just always curious as to how people navigate their space, because materials can always overwhelm as well. But you need them, or you might need them, or you're going to need them, or what if you needed them?
That's the idea
of discarding could be quite challenging as well.
So yes.
I'm just a bit curious. And with a little bit of textiles in my area of fondness, I have far too much material that I probably never will use, but I'm not getting rid of it. Because what if? Or I really love that fabric, or,
who knows.
So that's why I'm really curious about that.
People give me lots, because I know I like recycled fabric, people give me bags and bags and bags of fabrics and all sorts of things now too. So, there's always things that I wouldn't necessarily have bought, but, they come in. Andy, that piece in Suburban Secrets, that was all from recycled fabrics that a lady just dropped on my doorstep. And they were fabrics I would never use, but a lot of them were still in the paper that they came in, wrapped up in string. They'd never – metres and metres of fabrics had never, ever been opened. I suppose good intention to make gorgeous dresses or something back in the 70s or 60s or something. And
it'd be really interesting to go into to get people to – dig into their stash and ask them to pull out the things that, the good intentions projects.
Oh, yes.
What we've all got stashed away that you don't want to get rid of because it's useful, but then it hasn't actually made it anywhere beyond the box or the drawer or the bag or the cupboard. I think there's a whole installation.
Absolutely.
A little while ago, I saw an exhibition that you participated in called Suburban Secrets in Inglewood, mm-hmm. presented by the City of Stirling. And your work was in the window of an old building that had a variety of histories over its time. And I was quite fascinated by the work because it was essentially fabric stitched in these lines, but the lines were representative of the streets.
They were so... The actual exhibition was part of a grant that I got from the City of Stirling to do a project on Inglewood because I've lived in Inglewood for about 30 years and I've just seen lots of changes over that time and I wanted to explore that. So it became a lot of research and a bit of work. Well, the research component ended up being huge.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about because, you know, as an artist you're exhibiting – an artwork or artworks, but essentially the research component for all of the works in that exhibition seemed quite significant in order to inform and create the work. And that's what I'm quite intrigued about. So I want to hear a little bit about that and what it spawned for you, I guess, doing that digging.
Well, I could still be researching if I didn't have a deadline because I loved the research. I was in at the State Library. I was trawling through all the old telephone books to find addresses of businesses. I looked through all the old post office records. I looked on the Landgate's maps from the 1930s. So, and then basically I concentrated on Beaufort Street from pub to pub. So from the Inglewood Hotel to the Civic Hotel. That strip of, I think it's about a kilometre, and that is basically all of Inglewood. The Inglewood Hotel is actually in Mount Lawley now, but it was originally in Inglewood. And I looked at all the shops, you know, all those gorgeous little old shops with the big windows and figured out what each of those shops was through all the last 100 years.
Okay, I was going to say, how far back? Wow.
and what changes there have been. And I looked, you know, like the shops, those shops are gorgeous. And then you'll see some really clunky, modernish block of units, you know, you're like, why is that there? And then you go, oh, there was a whole pile of car yards along here once upon a time. And, you know, there's vacant blocks. And then you discover that there was actually a town hall in the middle of the street, which is just a restaurant now. It's the Himalayan Restaurant. And of course, all the history that some people do know about the clock tower and you know, the little corner delis, and there was a lot of bootmakers and fruit and veggie shops and how it's changed from, you know, basic groceries right through to cafes now. You know, in the 70s and 80s it was pizza shops and that just fascinated me. And the piece that came out of that that was in the actual original entrance to the theatre, so those big windows are were the entrance to the theatre, there's over 100, I think, 150, it's a while ago since I did it, strips of thread that each have a small piece of fabric stitched to them for each of the years of those 100 years. And they are all colour-coded depending on whether it's an original shop, a block of flats, whether it's when the flats or the building was put there, there's a section for vacant land. Then, stupidly, they all have stitching on them if I know what that shop, one of those little original shops, what they'll use, whether it's a fruit and veggie shop or a butcher or all those sorts of things.
So I remember reading
it. It was a bit crazy.
Well, as a viewer, it made perfect sense, but infusing that amount of history into a textile work, I was I'd not seen anything like that, and I was so intrigued by it. But it also engaged me in the history of that area, and I'm very familiar with that area as well for many years. I found that really intriguing. Have you ever embarked on an artwork or an exhibition with historical components before?
I suppose if you think about the exhibition that I had in 2018 of Our Time, Ordinary Lives, so I was looking at my grandmother and my mother and myself, and so my mother's pieces I made about my mother was called Remington Keys, And she was of the generation that when she got married at age 19, she had to leave her job in the government railways because of the marriage bar. And she then worked for a couple of years after she got married in a private company, and then she had me, and then she had other part-time jobs, and, you know, she'd come home and she'd say, oh, you know, I've just been for this interview and I had to use this thing called a golf ball typewriter and it terrified me. And then she went on to computers and, you know, she went back to study at university in her 40s. And then she typed all our assignments and, you know, there's just so many stories to do with keys and then computers and iPads and texting now that I made these pieces called Remington keys that each piece, that were wrapped fabrics again, each piece represented one of the keys on a typewriter and they're all in recycled fabrics that I've been given again and they're all in the colours of all the fabrics that she has had decorated the house with over the years, all the soft furnishings and, you know, our ball dresses and all those colours that are associated with all that, that history of that time. So, yeah, that's definitely one that involves a personal history.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. But I was more interested from a research aspect as well.
So like I did quite a bit of research on that time as okay. well. Yeah. So the other part of that story was my Nana came over from the East during the Second World War to marry my grandfather. So I did a lot of research on the Midland area and what life was like.
Okay.
It probably didn't totally come through. It ended up being more personal stories. But no, I haven't done anything like the Inglewood story as much.
Is that something that you like to do more of?
I think people would like me to do that, but it is a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I just had that passion for the Inglewood. You know, that and the family stories one, they sit with you for a couple of years and you think, how can I do this? How can I do this? And, you know, I haven't got one of those ideas floating around at the moment, whereas
So did you find that it connected you to your community differently once you had all of those backstories?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I've met a lot of people. I've met my neighbour around the corner who's 93 and has lived in that house all her life. She moved there as a baby and has come back to live as an adult. And, you know, and several other neighbours around that have a lot of connection with the area and have told me lots of extra stories that never got into the work.
It comes back to that art in everyday life. You know,
you don't
know what's going to inform and, you know, someone of that age and the experiences that they've had and the stories they've got to tell, you know, everything all sort of has its place on some level really, doesn't it?
And there's stories that are just everyday stories. They're not, you know, beautiful big fancy buildings in the city that do have a record. They're ones that the stories get lost if people don't record them.
Yeah, and they were so integral to daily life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it comes back to sense of community, sense of connection, sense of belonging to where you are. I think that's also why your work fascinated me because the labour, and I don't just mean the actual act of labour of creating, but the labour involved in or the consideration involved in what became the artwork. I haven't seen anything like that before and it really struck me. So I'm excited to speak to you and tell you how much I loved it. So thank you very much for that. So Louise, what do you do to nurture your creativity?
To nurture.
You talked about the walks and they started to present you with ideas and things for consideration.
So I, you know, walking every day, it's a way to, you know, de-stress my body but also gives me time to think a lot of my, you know, ideas or getting that idea sorted comes either in the shower or on that walk. I also read a lot, I listen to a lot of podcasts, other people's creative journeys. I'm listening to some lovely ones about art history at the moment. Just all sorts of things and, you know, take lots of photos, as you've seen on my Instagram. Just all inspire me.
And is there someone out there whose work that you really admire and you know, inspires you to do the things that you do?
Oh, there's a number of them. There's some fantastic artists in Western Australia, but there's also, I suppose, some of my heroes would be Sheila Hicks and Ruth Asawa and all those women around that sort of generation are just amazing work that they did in those days.
So. And when you've travelled, have you found yourself drawn to certain kinds of places and shops and things like that for materials inspiration, shall we say?
I tend not to buy lots of things when I've travelled overseas just because of the carrying them home. Right. But we do go to lots of art galleries and things like that, and usually it's been dragging children along with me, so you certainly get a different view of, you know, you have to explain why this is important and things like that. But yeah.
So going back to when you were a younger person and you went to do art at uni,
yep.
When you started that, if you can cast your mind back, can you think back to what vision you may have had for yourself back at that age?
Well, you know, you're 17 and the first textile class we had, she said, right, girls, none of you are allowed to get married or have a baby while you're doing this course. Which we all were horrified at the thought of either of those. I don't know really what I expected at that stage. I just wanted to make. The course did change and got much more conceptual by the time I left. I did 2 years of it. Whereas it started off as, you know, design and print and that's what I was really into at that stage. Whereas now, as a more mature woman, I have much more ideas to bring to the themes behind my work that I didn't have then.
So I want to ask you a little bit about you. You have got a family and that impacts on your ability to create and be productive, because it's, especially when children are young, it's a very time-consuming part of your life, being in those trenches. Was there any opportunity for creativity, or did it really just all have to go on pause? How did you navigate that?
Oh, no. I've always, you know, like when I stopped, like I had a small business screen printing clothes, as I mentioned before, and then when I decided that that was a really hard way to make a living and decided to get a proper job.
And what was that proper job?
The proper job was working as an occupational therapy assistant in an outpatient's clinic. So I did a lot of...
Very different.
Yeah, I did a lot of craft and art classes and cooking and gardening and those sorts of creative things anyway. And I always made things. I always sewed, you know, tried all sorts of handicrafts and other art and crafts over that time as well. Sewed the kids' clothes or did all the home furnishing. So I've never stopped. I just made a definite decision in about 2008 that I wanted to come back and exhibit my work and look at it creatively. Rather than, you know, the production line that I was doing before. So it's like, okay, I don't want to try and make a living out of this because there's the pressure of that. I want to enjoy and explore what I can do and make one-off pieces.
So when you came back, you said that you made a conscious decision in 2008.
Yep.
So when you embarked on that phase, did you feel doubt? And if so, how did you deal with it?
Okay, so the one thing that I did do at that point is I met Kate Whedon-Jones at a craft fair, and she said, come and join WAFTA. WAFTA is the West Australian Fibre and Textile Association, which I immediately did. And on probably about the third meeting they had, they announced they were going to have an exhibition. And I went, okay, I've made this commitment to myself. I've got to do this. And so we had to make a 3-metre length of 3 metre by 50 centimetre piece. So they were hanging in the Moores Gallery. So, I don't know if you know that building, but it's got beautiful high ceilings. So, and the exhibition was absolutely stunning. It was called Naturally, and it was about the year of natural fibres in 2009. So I got that piece mostly made and had serious doubt and contacted them and said, I think I've got to pull out of this. And Kate said, bring it to the meeting. So I brought it to the meeting, and there were several ladies there that oohed and aahed over it and told me all sorts of ideas I could do with it and just gave me that confidence to go back and try again. And then, of course, it was in the front row of the exhibition and it looked amazing and it was the best feeling. It was, you know, their support was just unbelievable for me. So that just pushed me on to keep making. And one of the people that was significant in that group of women was Anne Williams, and she is the one that I've just exhibited with.
They are a very, very skilled and proficient group of people. It's a fascinating group, WAFTA. I'm pleased to hear the benefit of the group, because with the advent of social media, I have seen the demise of some some of the more traditional creative groups because people are finding their communities online or in different ways. Yeah. But I totally understand what you're saying in terms of the support of the group, because making and creating is quite an isolating activity, isolated activity rather. Mm. And I love that your first time ended up being such a positive experience for you because if it had gone the other way, you maybe not have, you know. So I think that that's really lovely. So then what did you do after that? How did you navigate your pathway from there?
Okay, so, you know, I basically joined the committee. I did all of that sort of stuff. So you meet more people, you get involved in organising exhibitions and, you know, various other activities that they do, running workshops. I was a workshop coordinator at one stage, run workshops myself as well. And so they had probably an exhibition every couple of years after that, so I joined those. Then I got to know about other exhibitions that Contemporary Quilt Group run an exhibition called Stitched and Bound every second year. That's coming up soon. I'm making work for that at the moment. So I just started hearing about things and entering them. So Stitched and Bound was the first juried show that I went into, and I got in, and that was an absolute delight too, because that's the first time I put my work out there not knowing if it was going to get in, and that was just amazing. Had many rejections since then, as you do, everyone does. But yeah, that was a lovely positive experience to start with as well. And then there was a group of four of us from WAFTA that had an exhibition together. We formed a group called Meld. So the four of us had an exhibition at Showcase Gallery at Central TAFE, which I think is now their ceramic studio again. That was really successful as well. And I've just, yeah, continued since then. And then I had my first solo in 2018 at Midland Junction Art Centre. In between that time also, I started making wearable art. Have you heard of the Mandra Wearable Art Program? So, yeah, I did that for about 6 years and got heavily involved in that, you know, doing wardrobe and things like that as well.
So it sounds like your pathway is defined by the exhibitions as, I guess, sort of milestones and guides to work toward to keep, you know, motivating, not so much motivating, but as goals to work toward. Yeah. Along the way, are you selling much work?
Some types of work I make sell and others people can't quite figure out how to hang in their lounge room. Got to think about that. So, yeah, if I make work on canvases, often they sell, but some of the other stuff I don't think people quite know what to do with.
So is it all stored away in the studio? Is that why you know,
like,
the other room?
Like most of us, I think we have a lot of work under the bed and in the covers of it. Yeah, but, you know, I don't have a practice because my main focus is selling my work. Yeah. If I wanted that, I would have a completely different approach. And I did that back in my 20s. Yeah. I did production runs and I got completely bored with it. And you're making work to what other people need rather than on exploring this journey of what interests you.
That's a really interesting distinction, and I think it's a line a lot of people have to acknowledge at some point. How do you move forward? Do you move forward as you had done, you know, that earns you a living, but as you have said, it bored you and it was incredibly hard work, and then now you're in a position where you're able to do the work that interests you and you're motivated by. And do you feel that makes you a better artist?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, you've got to remember that every artist that's making work that's not making a living from it is either working outside of that area to make money or have a very supportive partner or some, you know, independent income from somewhere. You know, you've still got to survive somehow on this. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So would you look back at yourself and what advice would you give yourself, or is there something that you would suggest that you do differently?
I don't think I could have told my younger self this was the path. Yeah, I think it just comes step at a time, and, you know, I think even what I probably thought 3 or 4 or 5 years ago is quite different to what I'm thinking now.
Do you think people that are pursuing their creativity are more tapped into their intuition? Yeah. That's where it comes from?
Yeah, I think you get to the point where you can just trust that. You don't have to panic quite so much.
Because if we go back and look at children, they're so instinctive in what they do. And there seems to be points where for people that is perhaps not actively encouraged, or, I mean, interests also splinter off, and then people sort of come back later in life and reflect back on something that they had left behind. I was talking to someone the other day who knew as a child they wanted to be a writer, but it wasn't until they were older that they acknowledged that to themselves and actively pursued that.
I suppose it depends on your personal situation too, because some people just, you know, they're just trying to get through the day. And, you know, for me, I've always eked out that little bit of time, even if it's in front of the television, to stitch something or to make something. I can't get by the day without that. But other people just think, oh, I've got to get through this stage of my life and then I can start. A lot of people talk about when I retire, I will start. You know, several years ago, I thought if I don't start now, you know, looking at my mother and her sister with arthritic fingers, that if I wait until I start then, will I be able to do what I want to do? So, you know, you don't know what time you've got, do you, to do what you want to do?
I was wondering, looking at your work, whether you were someone that stitched in front of the television or crocheted in front of the television, or, you know, you work in your studio, because there seems to be, once you're, some of the work that you've done, for example, the markers.
Marking time,
those pieces. Yeah. There's, once the structure's there, there's like a repetition in the movement to create them. How do you do them?
Okay, so I need to work at a desk. So I have a desk set up. It's an old kitchen table set up in the studio with a proper office chair. So I'm, you know, trying to look after my body because, it does wreak havoc on your body. I've always got sore shoulders and sore fingers and pierced fingers and all the rest. And, you know, to get the needle through those last few bits of those works, I'm using a pair of pliers to push and pull the needle through. It's quite tough. Yeah. I've actually got a video on the making of one of those pieces if you're interested in seeing it. The main reason why I work in the studio at night is because I can't stand what my husband watches on television. It's the honest truth. And so as soon as he starts watching Survivor or something, I just leave and go into the studio. And, you know, I do watch television, but I watch documentaries and things like that and listen to podcasts and, you know, much more interesting stuff.
And have your children got creative pursuits, having grown up in an environment where their mother is creative?
Well, I did say to my daughter the other day, she won't like hearing this on the podcast, I did say to her the other day, because she just moved out, I said, would you like, you know, a little sewing kit to take with you? And she's like, no. She'll come back and get it. But, you know, she has danced and done art, and now she's a pre-primary teacher. But my oldest son is a photographer and videographer, and so he's definitely got that creative side of it. But, you know, that came later. I thought he was going to be a scientist or something originally.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I observe children of friends, and some are drawn to it and some overtly move away from it and say, I don't want anything to do with that because it's such a hard life.
Well, that's just what mum does anyway, you know. So
they're quite brutal, aren't they?
Having a family around you, they're the best critics, because they just couldn't care about what you do. You're not going to get any great praise from them. So it's quite, it settles you in your spot.
What are you looking at doing next? The title of the podcast is Tell Me What You're Working On. And, you know, you don't necessarily have to say what you're doing right now, but do you have ideas of what you want to tackle next, or where you'd like to go, or those kind of goals, creative goals?
So, this big body of work a lot of the work I've done prior, it's all kind of related to whatever's happening to me. So there's been sort of like a domestic map series where I just looked at, you know, every time I took the kids to school, or they're, you know, putting the washing away and, you know, those sorts of things. There was another piece on when my son got his disability support pension and the stresses around that. And so it's kind of following my life. And so this series has now been about this daily walk. And I think in our current times, this daily walk is going to continue to influence that for quite a while. So this particular Banks year is still spouting out work. You know, I've still made another piece just recently, a small piece for a show, tweaking that idea again. Another piece I'm working on at the moment is about that particular walk as well, just the walking around the street and the steps you take and things like that. So they will go somewhere, but I'm not quite too sure where. I'm kind of open to what happens next. Yeah.
So it's exploring phase.
Yeah. You know, I'm exploring a bit of just really simple weaving as well, but I've had to put that aside for a little while. So I don't quite know where that's going to go either.
And you put it aside because you don't know where it's going to go, or there's no time for that right now?
There's no time for that right now. Yeah. That's the one thing I want to do because that's the exciting thing. Whereas the other stuff, you know, you've kind of got to get it finished for, for something. You know, I look at maybe doing more little sculptural things and, you know, maybe some public art and things like that. But there, and I'm also thinking about an open studio. I keep putting that off as well because it's a big thing, because it's not just my open studio. I'd have, you know, a whole area of open studio. So it's quite a big project to do. Yes, there's lots of ideas, but what will actually go forward, I'm not 100% sure yet.
Where can people find out more about what you do or see your work, aside from if there's an exhibition coming up? How can they follow you?
Okay, so I have a website, louisewells.com, so they can sign up for the newsletter or information for that and get blog posts. I'm always active on Instagram and Facebook if they want to follow that as well. So it's Louise Wells Artist. Yeah, that's probably the simplest way to follow.
And as an artist, how do you feel about maintaining social media presence? Is it a chore? Is it something you enjoy? You know, you have blog posts for your website. That's a lot of work, all of those things as well.
Yeah. I think what's wonderful about it is that you can share your work with people all over the world. So when I was making back in the early 80s, you had to physically walk around and show people your work. Whereas now you can instantly put, you know, a little bit of work on progress on Instagram, which is pretty darn fast, and share it with people everywhere and get feedback, and and you get to see other people's work as well. And it's such a wonderful community, I think.
Has it connected you with other creatives?
Absolutely.
Far away. Yeah. And maintaining the website, do you find that hard work, or is that all right?
Well, you know, you can always do more.
That's an essential part of the business of being an artist these days. That's why I'm curious about that. And depending on the medium that you're in, for some people it's more organic than others. So that's why I was
curious. The website
curious.
Presence is a bit kind of static now. I think, you know, I did a lot of blogging probably 10 years ago and it had quite a good following, whereas now I think people go to it as a reference to, you know, confirm your identity more than anything, whereas that social media, you know, Instagram, Facebook, that sort of stuff is where people first see your work and get inspired and decide whether they want to follow you or not.
What advice would you give to young people who are interested in pursuing their creativity or beginning sort of perhaps doing a uni course or at a point of making decisions about what they want to do? Any thoughts?
Well, you know, it's certainly not going to be the simplest way to make a living. But I think you can't deny your passion for creativity if it's there. But I think you've also got to be a bit realistic that you're probably going to need another source of income if you want to truly pursue it, unless you go into arts administration or something like that. But I think, my work has definitely developed a lot more as I've got older and had more of a story to tell and been more confident in myself.
So don't give it up, kids. Pursue.
That's right, yeah. But just don't. Don't expect it all to happen at once.
Yeah, I think also, especially the way the state of arts funding in the country at the moment.
Arts funding, plus there's not actually many courses now, especially in textiles. I don't think there's a textile course in Australia, tertiary anymore, other than fashion.
That's so disappointing.
Mm.
Louise, it's been lovely to meet you. Thank you so much for sharing your experiences and your knowledge with me. I've loved seeing your work, and I look forward to seeing what you do next. However long you may need to create that, no pressure. I beg your pardon. But thank you so much for sharing your story and your background, and I wish you lots and lots of luck with where you go next.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be here today.
This project has been made with the support of the City of Stirling through their Community Creativity Fund.